Jesus calls us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's Word. Welcome to Truth Set Free, our Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities Q&A program. It is recorded live on Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. with Pastor Matt Lewis and Steve Winery. You can view the live program at our Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities Facebook page and on our YouTube channel. You can text your questions to 707-872-7677 or email them to crosswalkradio@gmail.com.
Part of the reason for that is because we had evidence of what was happening with Israel post-Babylon, and so Israel's evidence in archaeology came from after the Babylonian captivity, and there wasn't a lot of evidence before that point. Well, the more evidence they get, the further back the history of Israel is going, and, you know, every time they turn a shovel over in the nation of Israel, they're finding evidence for the reliability of the Old Testament. And so it's a nonsense, it's not a good position to come out against the Bible, especially when you're talking about the historical record, because every single time that there is an argument between the Bible and actual archaeology, is where you are actually digging up evidence. The lack of evidence is not evidence of the lack of a story. The lack of evidence is a lack of evidence. And so the fact that you don't have specifically any original transcript writings by Moses does not mean that Moses did not exist, does not mean that Moses did not write the Old Testament. The fact that you don't have any archaeological evidence for Moses at this point does not mean that Moses didn't exist. It means we don't have any archaeological evidence of that at this point. And that fact doesn't negate the idea that we will gain some archaeological evidence at some point in the future. And so you have this with all kinds of things that you have in the Bible. And so, you know, people who've come out against the Old Testament have been proved wrong, and, you know, wrong over and over and over. For example, one of my favorite examples is there was no evidence for Hittites. And so the Hittite kingdom is something that you see throughout the Old Testament. And so it was something that supposed scholars, biblical scholars, these are guys who say that they know the Bible and they know the scholarship behind the Bible, and they are not Christians necessarily. And so biblical scholars poo-pooed the idea of the Hittites, said it didn't exist. It was proof that the Bible was unhistorical until we found evidence of the Hittites. And then you find that they had an empire that spanned the whole Middle East, you know. And before that point, there was a lack of evidence for the Hittites. And, you know, after they dug them up, well, you know, it's all over the place. And so all the guys who said the Hittites didn't exist and the Bible is wrong look like idiots after the fact. And it's probably, this guy has probably made statements from what he's saying. He's probably already made statements that show him to be naive concerning the evidence. There are good books on archaeology. A couple of authors, Hoffmeyer is a great author, and Kitchen is another great author, and they're both archaeologists. And so they go through, and Hoffmeyer, both Hoffmeyer and Kitchen give evidence for the Exodus. And so one of the problems with the Exodus, actually a couple of the problems, Egypt is not going to talk about getting their tails whipped by a bunch of slaves. That is not what goes on Stella. That is not what's recorded in their history. They're never going to say that. We do have archaeological evidence of the existence of Israel early that is Egyptian. And so we've got that. And again, if you get these books by Hoffmeyer and Kitchen, you can check that stuff out. So number one, you're never going to get evidence that the Egyptians got wiped out by the Israelis that's written down by the Egyptians as a statement of historical fact. You're not going to get that. The other thing that you have a problem with when you're looking for evidence of the Exodus is you got a bunch of people in tents. They're not building cities as they're wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. And so you're not going to be able to go to Sinai necessarily and find a bunch of evidence for the existence of the Exodus and the Israelis and the encampments and that kind of stuff. You can go through and you can pace out where these encampments likely were. And so there's the fact that the geography matches what the book of Exodus and the book of Numbers talks about is evidence. But again, when you're talking about the Exodus, the evidence is not going to be like the evidence of Megiddo being an Israeli city, for example, or Samaria being an Israeli city. These are places where there's stones in the ground. And so it's going to be slightly different. It's a little bit more ephemeral at that point. So.
Did you see the patterns of Exodus?
I've seen that.
What are your thoughts on that? And I don't mean to make this a huge long thing, but
I think that there are still patterns of evidences based on a couple of things. One of them is that there's some problems with Egyptian chronology. And Egyptian chronology comes from a priest named Merneptah, basically, and we get it from Greek historians. And Merneptah, it looks like he took some kingships and placed them chronologically after each other when some of them were probably co-regents, northern kingdom of Egypt versus it's called the upper and the lower kingdoms. And so the lower kingdom being the northern and the upper being the southern kingdom of Egypt. And so you can have two pharaohs having reigns at the same time. And so there's probably some overlap there. Most of it is about the idea that a lot of scholars mistakenly make that because the treasure cities are called Ramesses, that they have to have been built built by Ramses.
Right.
And that's not necessarily so. Ramses can take his name. It comes from Ra. And so Ra is one of the gods of Egypt, and his that name and variations of that name were around for quite a while. And so basically what a lot of scholars do is they take the Exodus as being during the time of Ramses and his father Seti, and that puts it a couple of hundred years later than where the Bible puts it. So the Bible puts the Exodus right around 1446 BC. And what the Ramses theory, where it puts it, is about 200 years later. And so if you take and you shift some of the evidence that you've got in the Bible, what scholars try to do is they try to take the 13th century BC Exodus and they try to match that to Egyptian and Israeli history. And there's problems with that because you've got a 200-year difference.
Yeah.
And if you take that and you put it back to the 1446 date, then it works out just right well.
Yeah.
All the way through. And so and I believe that that's true. And
so in layman's terms, when is the start date based off of the pharaohs, and the dating method is different in Egyptian thought versus Jewish thought?
It's not even Egyptian thought. It's Egyptologist interpretation of specifically the issue of the treasure cities and Ramses himself. That's where the problem comes in.
And
so they're assuming that that dates.
And the guy that started that, everyone just kind of took that as gospel. Uh-huh. And so the whole history has been from that point. But if that point's wrong, then that fixes it.
Right. That fixes it. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So what I was going to say on this question is I was a skeptic. And I remember I first got into Christianity. God showed me some cool things. I became a believer. And then I got to that first Bible contradiction. And I'm like, mm-hmm. But if you go through this, I mean, been talking here for 10 minutes or so, Haley's Bible handbook. I have a whole library full of stuff.
Yeah.
What I was looking for is some things I could sink my teeth into to believe. And what I ended with was such a mountain of evidence that I realize I didn't know who I was dealing with. And the evidence is so overwhelming that it's not that it converted me. It's that the truth is on this side so much more so that I look like a fool being on the other side where some of these, you know, internet commando and YouTubers are.
Yeah.
And so when you go dive into that, it's like that is such an encouragement to your faith. But I love how, you know, the point I am at now, and I like how Missler says it, which is how you described it, was if you want to save yourself hours of boring library research when it comes to the documentary hypothesis, just go and read what Jesus said.
Yeah.
And then it's over.
Yeah. And, you know, the basics of the documentary hypothesis of, you know, those things have been abandoned by real biblical scholars.
Yeah.
You got guys who know their stuff.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't work, you know, and I'm not going to go, it's really boring, but I'm not going to go into all the details of that, but it's arbitrary. Basically what they're doing is they're saying, you know, when you're talking about Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, it was two different creation stories written by two different people. And at different times, and one is a Eloist and the other one is a Jehovist, and again, it's already getting boring. Right. And so, but one of the problems with that is the things that they think identify a certain section are things that you see in sections that shouldn't be identified as that. And it just all falls apart. And so it was torn apart as soon as it came out. But it's one of those things that non-believers latched onto to try to minimize the impact of the Bible in their lives.
Yeah. And totally.
That's the way that that always goes. Here's another one with this. There's an issue with Jericho, and when you read in the Bible, the walls of the city of Jericho was burnt. There was no long siege. It was 7 days, and the city of Jericho was taken and burnt to the ground. The walls fell out, and what else can we say? It looks like there was an earthquake. When you're looking at the biblical text, God used something to make the walls fall out. In any case, when you go to the city of Jericho, Garstang, he was an archaeologist, found exactly that, that the walls fell out, that the city was burnt. There were basically fired clay jars that were full of grain, and they were burnt. And that lets you know that there was no long siege because they had plenty of food. And so all the aspects of the story of Jericho were fulfilled. Garstang, you know, believed that that was a fulfillment, you know, that was evidence that the story of Joshua and Jericho were in actuality the truth. And so then another archaeologist who was actually a student of Garstang took over the dig at Jericho and had it carbon dated. And she found that the city of Jericho was destroyed about 150 years before the biblical dates for Jericho. And so she said that Jericho couldn't have fallen to the Israelis because nobody lived there at the time, despite the evidence that everything that the Bible talks about actually happened there. Some other archaeologists have gone back and looked at some of the evidence, and one of the things that she didn't do was identify certain types of pottery, and he goes back and identifies a certain types of pottery, and there's some other things with some amulets, that kind of stuff, that actually dates it to the time that the Bible puts the dating of Jericho, which would let you know that the carbon 14 date is inaccurate. And so a lot of the problems that you have in archaeology have to do with what your assumptions are. And if you're assuming that carbon 14 dating is accurate for the dating of Jericho, then you're going to have a problem there. But when you look at what's there on the ground, and what we know for sure is evidence of the timeline, including these amulets that are buried in graves and that kind of stuff in that area, and some of the pottery that's used there, and whether or not it would be in that area and that kind of thing. They use this stuff to try to get an about date for cities in the Middle East. When you start looking at those things, they all date them at the time of Joshua, the biblical time of Joshua. And so, you know, there are arguments over this stuff. And so if you don't know about the argument, then it looks like the Bible's been refuted until you get biblical archaeologists and he goes, well, no, it's not. And in fact, here's the reality here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have to keep that in mind. Archaeology is not an exact science, and dating in archaeology is not exact unless you have areas that you can go from. So it's 15 years after the Battle of Carchemish, or you know, something along those lines, that's put on a stela, you know, that kind of thing. Then you can start getting some accurate dates, but otherwise, these are about times.
Sure,
you have to keep that in mind.
All right, here's my next one. It's from Trey. Are those who come to Jesus during the tribulation and the millennium just as much a part of the church as prior to the rapture? But the marriage supper of the Lamb is at Revelation 19:9. So do the new believers from the tribulation and millennium just get leftovers?
You know, did Abraham get leftovers? Did Noah get leftovers? Did Elijah get leftovers? Did John the Baptist get leftovers? They were all part of the people of Israel and God's covenant with Israel, and they were not part of the church. One of the things that you have in connection with the tribulation period specifically is that seven-year period is spoken about in Daniel chapter 9. And so in Daniel 9, it talks about the nation of Israel and God's plan for Israel, and specifically the city of Jerusalem and the people of Israel. And that plan is dated as being a 490-year period. And that period of time was fulfilled up until the time of Jesus, 7 years short of that, 483 years, 7 years short of that. And the last 7 years is the tribulation period. And so basically what you have in the book of Daniel, in Daniel chapter 9, and I'm giving you the short version, you can get there's a book on this called The Coming Prince by Sir Robert Anderson, and it's a great book on this. But in any case, what you have there is Gabriel the angel is talking to Daniel, and God is revealing to Daniel the next 490-year time period. And it goes to the death of the Messiah, actually right before the death of the Messiah, to his presentation to the people of Israel. And then there's a gap that includes the death of the Messiah, the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, and the dispersion of the nation of Israel. And then the history starts again in the last 7 years. That makes the last 7 years before Christ comes back a historically Israeli period. It's not a church age period. And so the church age is in the gap between the rejection of Christ and the beginning of the tribulation period. And so that's when Jews and Gentiles come together and become a part of the church. That's why you see the marriage supper of the Lamb in heaven before the church comes back to the earth. And so obviously, if that's the case, then you have living believers on the earth that are not taking part in that. And so God's got a different plan for them. And that's why I said, you know, is Abraham getting leftovers? You know, is John the Baptist getting leftovers? No, he's not. You know, God just, it's a different time period, and God was dealing with them in different ways. Actually, he's dealing with us in different ways than he did with them. And so when you get to the tribulation period, it kind of goes back to Old Testament. And so they still have their plan. And so, for example, it talks about the 144,000 and that they're going to serve the Lamb for 1,000 years in the millennial period. And so we're going to serve him too. But they are specifically mentioned as being servants of Jesus during that period of time. And the other people that are in connection with that, you got Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and David and all these guys. David is specifically mentioned in millennial passages as being king over Israel during the millennium. David is. And so you have the apostles mentioned as being judges over the different tribes of Israel, 12 apostles, 12 judges. They rule over the tribes of Israel. And then you have us being mentioned as being people who rule over the cities of the earth. And it would include Israel also. And so everybody's got a purpose and God's got a plan for all of us during the millennial period. And it looks like after that period, everything's combined. That's when you have the new heaven and the new earth. And you have these interesting things going on with the description of the New Jerusalem. So, for example, there's 12 gates in the New Jerusalem. They're made out of pearls. Each gate is one pearl. That's a big old clam. God can do anything he wants. But each one is made of pearl, and that's a Gentile jewel. And on each one of the gates is one of the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. And then in the foundation, you have 12 different stones, and those stones are listed. Those stones are arguably the stones that are in the high priest's breastplate that had the names of the tribes of Israel on them. But in the New Jerusalem, they have the names of the apostles on them, the 12 apostles. And so you see a mixing of Jew and Gentile when you get to the New Jerusalem, and that presumably is the case throughout the rest of eternity. So there's different plans for different people, and those things begin to mesh during the tribulation, during the millennial period, and they are finally enmeshed by, in my opinion, by the time that we get to the new heaven and new earth. But God's got a different plan for different groups of people during the millennium. So,
any leftover in heaven is still going to be a rocking, awesome situation.
Yeah. I'm good with leftovers in heaven.
Yeah, totally. Okay, it's about volunteering to glorify God. If you are volunteering, is it wrong for someone to mention a person by name for the work they are doing in prayer? Is this the same as getting their reward on earth now, like clapping your hands and saying good for you? Is it cheating them out of their heavenly rewards? I do understand works do not get us to heaven.
Right, yeah. And you're right. Works don't get you to heaven, but we do get rewards for our works when we get to heaven. And so Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 talks about the fact that all our works are going to be tested as if by fire, and the fire is going to burn away the wood and the hay and the stubble and leave the gold and silver and precious jewels. And so you're right there. So our works don't get us to heaven, but we do get rewards for our works. And so as to your question, one of the things that me and my best buddies, we all got saved right around the same time. One of the things that me and my best buddies always did with each other is when we were, talking about the things that the Lord did in our lives, there would be these times that, you'd be all excited and start talking about what Jesus used you to do. And sometimes it would get into some ego-driven stuff. And whenever that happened, all the rest of us would just clap. Just go, well done, good and faithful servant, and do that kind of thing. And just go, we just want to give you your reward, buddy, and that kind of thing. And you know what? In actuality, that can be something that would take away your reward if you were doing it to be seen by men. And if that's what you were looking for, if you're looking for the acclaim of people, then God's going to consider that your reward. And so Jesus said, when you do your good works, when you give alms, don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing, or vice versa. I always get that, back and forwards. And you don't let people know that you're doing these things, so that your Father who sees in secret, Jesus said, will reward you openly. And when you pray, you go into your closet and you pray. You don't go out and do it in public.
That's all the time we have for this week. If you have questions for Pastor Steve, email us at crosswalkradio@gmail.com or send us a text at 707-872-7677. God bless. You've been listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you are interested in purchasing a copy of today's message or wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Pastor Steve's teachings to listen to or download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we are located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday morning service times are 7:30, 9:15, and 11 a.m. We also have Wednesday and Sunday evening services at 6:30 p.m. We hope you have been blessed today, and join us again next time for Crosswalk.